Okay. So good afternoon. Many thanks to the organizers for the invitation. So the subject of the talk will be interaction-driven states and bilayer grapheme. So Oskar and Yona covered this topic in the at-zero magnetic field. I would like to address a different regime, the quantum Hall regime, where the state is the quantum Hall state at zero filling factor. And so I would like to study conceptually a very similar problem, but in this regime, it appears to be simpler. And I would like to argue that some definitive conclusions can be made about the nature of the state already now. So let me briefly summarize the experimental data. Some of it was already mentioned before. The works done at Harvard, Basel, Manchester, Riverside groups on suspended high quality samples drew the following picture for the ground state at zero doping in the quantum Hall regime, which in practice, is achieved already at one Tesla and up. A strongly insulating behavior was observed. The transport gap was scaled linearly with the perpendicular magnetic field and was on order of the 10 Tesla per Kelvin. This was observed in most of the experiment, with a notable exception of the Basel experiment, where in cleaner samples, the state never really went insulating. The conductance was fluctuating in this range as the magnetic field was varied. So if this behavior is reproducible, this could be quite an interesting story. Now, at zero magnetic field, also two qualitatively different scenarios were reported in Harvard and Manchester group. The state was metallic, but displayed non-trivial, non-monotonic features, functions virtually of any parameter, magnetic field, carrier concentration, electric field, source drain bias. So in cleaner samples in Basel experiment and zero magnetic field, the differential conductance displayed this gap-like feature and with a minimum at about 0.2. Conductance quantum, which I guess qualifies for the insulating behavior, but as I said, at higher magnetic fields, the state never really went insulating. And finally, in the Riverside experiment, the strongly insulating behavior was observed at all magnetic fields from zero to quantum Hall regime. In addition to that, so these dual-gated devices with top and bottom gates provided additional insights. Such devices were made at Harvard and Riverside. So there, in the quantum Hall regime, as the electric field was applied, phase transition characterized by a spike in conductance was observed. And the transition was to another insulating state, and this was for both polarities of the sample. So this data strongly... Could you hear me before? Yeah? So this data strongly suggests that the ground state is interaction-induced, but it doesn't tell us explicitly what the nature of the state is. So in the challenges, which is both theoretical and experimental challenge to understand the nature of the states and provide ways to unambiguously identify these phases in the experiment. So there was quite a bit of theory works done on this subject. So in my work, I try to answer the following questions. So can one realistically list all the phase diagrams one can expect for a zero magnetic field? This was presented in Oskar and Jonas' talk. So I did a similar problem in the quantum Hall regime. So this is the phase diagram. So then the question is, do we have sufficient data already to identify the particular phase realized in the experiment? So, and I will try to argue that yes, thanks to this phase transitions observed in the dual-gated devices. And finally, if that's the case, can we infer something about the state at zero magnetic field? For the case when this insulating state persists at all magnetic field, one can show that the antiferromagnetic state can be, it is a theoretical possibility that antiferromagnetic state can persist at all orbital magnetic fields. So that would be a viable explanation for the state at riverside experiment. Okay, so let me very briefly go through the technical details. This is the Hamiltonian I would like to work with. In the low energy tubule model, the low energy degrees of freedom are described by the 8-component spinner in the valley times sublattice, which is equal to the layer times spin space. You have the kinetic energy described by the chiral quadratic Hamiltonian, which also includes the orbital magnetic field. There is the Zeeman effect, and there is the effect of this perpendicular electric field. Now, the leading order, to the leading order, the interactions are symmetric in the valley and sublattice space and are described by the Coulomb potential, but necessarily, as was pointed out already, there are components which are asymmetric in the valley and sublattice space simply because there is no full rotational symmetry in the spaces for the real lattice. This is not the true symmetry of the lattice. So there are, one can write down the most general form of these interactions based on symmetry grounds, and there are 8 asymmetric coupling constants. And one can also, since we know that they come from the Coulomb interactions, one can estimate them as charge squared times some lattice spatial scale. Similarly, one can include the electron-phonon interactions. One can also write down the most general form of them. So these interactions, they're very important, so as was emphasized, because they determine, besides other effects, they determine the favored ground state. So when we apply orbital magnetic field, the spectrum is split into the series of Landau levels. Each Landau level is fourfold degenerate in the valley times spin space. Besides that, the zero energy Landau level in the quadratic approximation has additional twofold degeneracy because, interestingly, the 0 and 1 magnetic oscillator states belong to this Landau level. And another interesting point, so the wave functions in each valley reside on only one sublattice. So in this sense, the valley and sublattice degrees of freedom become equivalent, and I would like to call this isospin. And for this 0-1 degrees of freedom, I would like to use the term isospin. So in the nu equals zero quantum Hall state, we take the single particle spectrum and fill it with electrons, and nu equals one means that the Landau low zero energy Landau level is half filled, so on average there are 4 electrons per 8 degenerate states per each orbital. Now, since we have quenched kinetic energy, the system will be very susceptible to interactions which will favor some broken symmetry state. In the quantum Hall regime, this is described by the theory of quantum Hall ferromagnetism. The idea is based on the Hund's rule from atomic physics, which tells us that the energy of repulsive interactions can be minimized if all orbitals are occupied in essentially the same way, and the remaining question is then in which way. So for the zero energy Landau level and bilayer, there is this intrinsic anisotropy in the 0-1 subspace simply because the wave functions of 0 and 1 magnetic oscillator states differ. And this was worked out in these papers. Due to this anisotropy, the favored phase is when 4 electrons arrange into 2 pseudospin singlet pairs, and within each pair, they are in the same state in the valley times spin. But very importantly, at the level of symmetric interactions, these 2 spinners, chi A and chi B, in the valley times spins, as long as they are orthogonal, they can be completely arbitrary. So there is a degeneracy of the ground state. One can introduce the order parameter, which is just the single particle matrix of these states. So the preferred order in the valley time spin space is determined by the effects that explicitly break the valley or sublattice symmetry. There are single particle effects, the Zeeman effect, which favors just spin polarization characterized by the Zeeman energy, which is about 1 Kelvin per Tesla and depends on the total magnetic field. Now, conveniently, in these dual gated devices, there is this perpendicular electric field which favors layer charge polarization and breaks isospin symmetry. Energy is the electric field times the spacing between the layers. And most importantly, so those asymmetric interactions result in the isospin anisotropy. The energy of this this effect can be calculated just by taking the matrix element of the Hamiltonians of these interactions with respect to this ground state manifold, and one gets something called, which is quadratic in the order parameter. So this is the most general form of the isospin anisotropy, and it is fully characterized by just two energies, U perpendicular and UZ. So they're expressed in terms of the coupling constants as follows, and one can estimate their bare values like this, E squared times some spatial lattice scale over the magnetic length squared. So they depend on the perpendicular magnetic field, and depending on what you plug in for the spatial scale, you get something on order 1 to 10 Kelvin per Tesla. But additionally, in principle, those coupling constants and consequently these energies, they at lower magnetic fields, they get renormalized according to the RG presented by Oscar Njona. So we take the sum of those three effects, and these effects determine as the preferred order in the valley times spin space. So the system is characterized by four parameters: the Zeeman energy and the electric field energy. We know them and we can vary them experimentally, but most importantly, it was, again, as was already emphasized, we don't really know what these energy anisotropy energies are. They're determined by microscopic details of interactions of which we don't have reliable knowledge. So the most efficient course of action is just to consider all possibilities and obtain the phase diagram. So if we minimize the sum of these symmetry breaking effects, we obtain the so-called classical Hartree-Fock phase diagram. So to get a clear picture, let's approach this problem step by step. Let's first minimize just the anisotropy energy. It depends on two parameters, U perpendicular and UZ. And this is a mathematical exercise. We obtain this phase diagram. There are four phases. Ferromagnetic phase, where this 0-1 pseudo spin singlet pairs are in the same spin state and form an isospin singlet. There is antiferromagnetic phase, where these pairs are in spin states with opposite spin polarization and reside in opposite, in different layers. At the level of this anisotropy energy, before we introduce Zeeman effect, there is overall SU2 spin symmetry for those phases. The spin is not fixed, only the relative spin is fixed. Now, there are two fully isospin polarized phases, which I want to call interlayer coherent by analogy with quantum Hall bilayers, semiconducting, and fully layer polarized phase. So in the interlayer coherent phase, this is spin singlet phase, and the isospin of both of all electrons is on the equator of the Bloch sphere, and this describes some type of bond ordering between the layers. But there is no charge polarization, charge imbalance between the layers in this phase, and there is remaining U1 degeneracy. In the fully layer polarized phase, the isospin is on the equators on the Bloch sphere, and this describes just the layer polarized phase. And fully, I want to call it fully layer polarized phase because I will have partially layer polarized phase in a second. Now let's add the Zeeman effect and minimize the sum of the anisotropy and Zeeman energies. This is what we get. The either spin singlet phases are not affected by the Zeeman effect. The spin polarized phases, spin degeneracy gets lifted. But the most interesting transformation concerns this antiferromagnetic phase. It becomes favorable to form this non-collinear spin polarization because we are minimizing the sum of the Zeeman energy and some antiferromagnetic exchange between these spins. So both spins have the same projection on the direction of the magnetic field and opposite in the plane perpendicular to the field. And this optimal angle depends on the ratio of the Zeeman energy to this anisotropy energy. So, and I should also mention, so this gives us the phase diagram in bilayer at zero electric field. And what I should also mention that chronologically this work started for nuclear zero state in monolayer, and for monolayer one obtains essentially identical phase diagram. So now let's add the electric field. Canted antiferromagnetic phase, spin polarized phase do not change. The Z2 degeneracy of the fully layer polarized phase gets lifted, and the interlayer coherent phase is modified in the following way. Now the isospin is not on the equator anymore, but has some optimal projection on the Z direction, which characterizes the charge imbalance between the layers. So the, it's partially layer polarized phase, and there is still some remaining interlayer coherence determined. It's kind of characterized by the perpendicular component. All right, so this was the phase diagram in the space of anisotropy energies, but as I said, we don't really know what they are, and this is the actual question, and we cannot really change them in the experiment. So it's more efficient and probably more appealing for experimentalists to draw the phase diagram in the space of parameters that we can actually change. This would be the electric energy and the Zeeman energy for fixed values of the anisotropies. And importantly, since the anisotropy energies depend on the perpendicular magnetic field, and since as long as renormalizations are negligible, they're linear in the magnetic field. So the only way to change the Zeeman energy relative to the anisotropy energy is to tilt the magnetic field relative to the sample. So along this vertical axis, this means tilting the magnetic field. So in this space, I will have four qualitatively different pictures according to which phase is favored by the anisotropy alone, which would be the origin in these pictures. And we will make use of them shortly. So this is the phase diagram which summarizes the phases one may have in the real bilayer graphene, but we don't really know what they are because we don't know what the actual phase is because we don't know the actual values of those anisotropy energies. So we want to compare it with experimental data, and for that we need to understand the transport properties. So in the quantum Hall regime, one distinguishes charge bulk and edge excitations, and the general statement that the bulk charge excitations are gapped for any order of any quantum Hall ferromagnet, and usually the lowest energy excitations are skirmions. So the question is, what are the edge excitations? And this is quite an interesting problem in itself. It was studied some time ago for the nuclear zero state in monolayer for some specific edges. Technically, pretty much all you can do is either armchair or zigzag edge. And the picture that emerged is that the spin polarized phase, it has gapless counter propagating edge excitations. Therefore, it should have metallic edge conductance. And ideally, the sample, okay, that's another thing. While other phases, they're gapped. So, of course, the questions are, can we generalize that to bilayer? And in principle, how sensitive are these conclusions to the structure of the edge? In principle, some generalizations of these works are possible for bilayer, but I would like to present a topological argument instead. So the idea is just to calculate the order parameter in the full valley times sublattice times spin space. And if we do that for the spin polarized phase, we get this. The crucial property is that in each valley, the wave functions reside on only one sublattice, this means that necessarily we see that necessarily the order parameter is a mixture of the actual ferromagnetic order parameter, which is this piece, and the quantum spin hole order parameter. So this is kind of the ultimate topological reason for why we have those edge states. The spin polarized phase of the nu equals zero quantum hole ferromagnet is in fact a mixture of actual ferromagnetic, has a mixture of ferromagnetic order and a quantum spin hole order. While if we do the same for the other remaining phases, we find that they are in a sense topologically trivial many body insulators. So let's see how much more we can squeeze out of these statements. So the spin polarized phase is, has gapless collective edge excitations, and ideally in bilayer would exhibit Fourier squared over H conductance, while all other phases are gapped and therefore fully insulating. So very importantly is that there is no phase transition between the at the boundaries between the partially layer polarized phase and fully layer polarized phase as we apply the electric field. So as we apply the electric field, the isospin of the moves from the equator to the pole, and this is just the line where it finishes crossing over to the fully layer polarized phase. Similarly, in the cantor antiferromagnetic phase, this line is where the this crossover kind of ends, and the phase becomes fully spin polarized phase. So these are not the phase transition lines, and therefore one should not expect any sharp features like a conductance spikes at these points. Now, since these two phases, they're fully insulating, so as we cross this line, we should not see any features in the in transport. This phase should remain insulating. But very interestingly, since the cantor antiferromagnetic phase continuously interpolates between the antiferromagnetic phase at the theoretical limit of zero Zeeman and the spin polarized phase in the for large enough Zeeman, so and antiferromagnetic phase is insulating while the ferromagnetic phase is metallic. So then just by the continuity argument, we have to conclude that necessarily the edge transport gap has to decrease continuously as we tilt the magnetic field and eventually close as we reach the fully spin polarized phase. There's no other way. So here I plot the expectation for the edge transport gap on top of this phase diagram. So this is the effect I'm talking about. The edge transport gap should close as we tilt the magnetic field, while at this line, there shouldn't be any sharp features in transport. Okay, so is this enough information to answer the question, what phase is realized in this nu equals zero insulating state? So I take the Harvard data as an example, but presumably for Riverside, this piece of data is the same, right? So in the quantum hole regime. So we just fix some perpendicular magnetic field and we apply electric field. And what we see is the phase transition, some spike. Now we have four options according to which phase could be favored by the isospin anisotropy. So let's just consider them case by case basis. So could it be the interlayer coherent phase at zero electric field? So this is one option. And here don't confuse the vertical axis. So here is the tilting of the magnetic field. Here is a perpendicular magnetic field, but we just take some horizontal cuts here. So if I were in the interlayer coherent phase, then I wouldn't, as I apply the electric field, I wouldn't have a phase transition. The isospin is on the equator of the Bloch sphere at zero electric field, and then it would continuously go to the pole, to the north pole for one polarity of the electric field and to the south pole for the other. We wouldn't see the phase transition at all. Now, could it be the fully layer polarized phase at zero electric field? Then, no, because first of all, because then we would have just one transition line as we flip the layer polarization, and in fact, this line would be exactly at the zero electric field. So in this case, the state at exactly zero electric field shouldn't even be insulating. You would be sitting right at this conductance spike. So you would have either this phase transition at zero electric field, or perhaps you could have some hysteretic behavior. But in any case, you would see only one transition as you swipe the electric field from negative to positive values. Okay, so then could it be the spin polarized phase at zero electric field? And at first glance it looks consistent. We will have two phase transitions here, but we expect this phase to be metallic. Ideally it should show something like x squared over h, 4 squared over h. So we have to rule that out based on these grounds. So at this point I just have run out of phases, so it has to be the Kentit antiferromagnetic phase, and pretty much everything looks consistent. So it is an insulating phase. We have two phase transitions for each polarity of the sample, and interestingly, we transition to this partially layer polarized phase for some charge polarization, and then we cross over to the fully layer polarized phase, but we shouldn't see any feature here. And in practice, depending on what the parameters are, this region could also be quite narrow, but there is no problem at all in this case. Yes, so one can extract from the value of the critical electric field, we can extract this combination of the anisotropy energies. We get something like 20 Kelvin per Tesla, which is consistent with the estimates, and it is linear in the perpendicular magnetic field. And as I said, we don't really know to reliably claim what the values of the anisotropies are, but we know something. If you ask me, I can comment on that. So in principle, the fact that we have Kentian antiferromagnetic phase means that there is certain these values are in a certain region, and in principle, this is consistent with what we would expect from microscopics. Okay, so if that's the case in the quantum Hall regime, can we infer something about the state at zero magnetic field? For the case when it is metallic, I don't have much to say. The viable explanation was provided that this is the cinematic phase, but for the case when the insulating state persists at all magnetic fields, the first thought that comes to mind is, okay, let's say we don't know what the phases in the quantum Hall regime are in a zero magnetic field, but they have to be adiabatically connected to each other. And if in the quantum Hall regime we have the Kentian antiferromagnetic phase, okay, Kentian just due to the fact that we have some Zeeman effect. So can it be just the case that we have antiferromagnetic phase all the way down to zero magnetic field? And I should mention that in the theoretical analysis of this paper, so the antiferromagnetic phase at zero magnetic field was put forward as a likely candidate. So can we support this even more? Yes, we can do some mean field calculation, which shows that in a certain, but quite completely realistic regime of coupling constants, we can have the regime where the antiferromagnetic phase at zero magnetic field and in the quantum Hall regime, they're just adiabatically connected. So as you apply the magnetic field, you cross over to this antiferromagnetic phase of the nu equals zero quantum Hall ferromagnet. One can calculate the mean field spectrum. So we have some finite value at zero magnetic field. And then in the quantum Hall regime, eventually we will have linear dependence on the perpendicular magnetic field for screened interactions. So the gap is determined just by the interaction. So and it looks quite consistent with the data. Okay, finally, the smoking gun feature. So as I said, I would urge experimental groups to try and give a try for this tilted field experiment. The expectation is in the quantum Hall regime, when you have some finite perpendicular component, practically, so you have to be above one Tesla. So then the expectation is, as you apply the parallel component, you cross over to the ferromagnetic phase and you reach it at some finite value of the Zeeman energy relative to the unknown anisotropy energy. We don't really know what it is, but we can expect this slope, the parallel to perpendicular component, to be on order 10. So if you have 45 Tesla in Tallahassee, that looks reasonable, kind of, to give it a try. And yes, finally, so maybe Professor McDonald will mention it. So this result is in contrast with their conclusion at zero perpendicular magnetic field, but finite parallel magnetic field when you apply, just introduce the Zeeman effect. So their result is you also have this canted antiferromagnetic phase, but the gap, there are no edge states, and the transport gap in the bulk does not really change with the magnetic field, and the pure ferromagnetic order is never reached. There is always some remaining antiferromagnetic contribution. So the qualitative difference is quite clear physically in the quantum Hall regime, as I said. So the ferromagnetic and quantum spin Hall order parameters, they're just glued to each other because our condensate consists of the states in the zero energy lambda level. So when you spin polarize, you at the same introduce some quantum spin Hall component, which eventually facilitates the edge transport. Yeah, okay, so this is the summary. Thank you for your attention.
Question?
So we, that is the Harvard group, have done this experiment of a tilted magnetic field, and we've seen that the slope does not change.
Yes.
Is that is consistent, right? Because we have
this is consistent with this picture. So if this anisotropy energy, let's say 20 Kelvin per Tesla, you did 45 degrees. So you change your, so this is, let's say this is the Zeeman energy at perpendicular orientation. So this line is one Kelvin per Tesla. You got here, you multiply your Zeeman by a square root of two. But there was a little and systematic change, right, in the value of the critical electric field, like 5%.
So the slope changed a little bit?
The value of the critical field, yes. So this is your phase transition line. So you do more, you make your Zeeman greater, you make the tilt greater, and your critical electric field grows.
a tiny amount.
Tiny, yes. Well, if it starts, so this curve starts vertically. So you should see tiny. Yeah, but the hope is to get to this value, which would be like parallel to perpendicular ratio, order of 10, 20, 30, I don't know. If it's 50, there is no chance because we have 45 Tesla.
It's like the experiment is certainly less than 50. We have some data now suggesting indeed the when you just apply the implant magnetic field.
So just keep tilting. So if
only theorists can say that.
No, I don't think so. Yeah, so it kind of looks quite extreme because you need some parallel component of exposure. You want to keep it small, but you want to be outside the quantum Hall regime. It's not clear. Maybe you still want to study the regime when you still want to study the regime when perpendicular is also zero. But if you want to be in the quantum Hall regime, so you want to beat about one Tesla and apply as much as you can to parallel, but you don't need to do fine tuning. So you just make your field max and go through the parallel orientation as much as accurately as you can and see what happens.
More question? Yeah.
A lot of the physics seems to come from this asymmetric Coulomb interaction term, which you started out in the beginning. Can you give like a simple physical explanation of what is that term from, and why is it not contained like in the normal Coulomb interaction symmetric term?
No, the symmetric term is dominant. We take it into account at the first stage. Right. But so this gives us this quantum Hall ferromagnet state, but it doesn't, there is no preference between ordering of valley or spin degrees of freedom. Any phase on this phase diagram at this level is the same. And these anisotropies, they come from the asymmetries, microscopic details of interactions. They favor us. Some phase to give you some physical idea. So this UZ anisotropy, it's pretty much your kind of Ising interlayer layer anisotropy capacitance. Sometimes it's called capacitance anisotropy, interlayer capacitance anisotropy. So it comes from the difference between intra and interlayer interactions, and you would expected to be positive. So I considered kind of all phases without any assumptions, but in reality, most probably you are in the range of positive UZ, and this regime is probably not realistic. So then you have less choices already. And also, for example, if you take into account electron-phonon interactions, so then they give us some negative, they're effectively attractive, they give us some negative U perpendicular. If you add those two vectors, so you end up somewhere in this quadrant. That's why I said antiferromagnetic phase is kind of consistent. And another thing, I did this for monolayer. If you take into account renormalizations of this coupling constants, so then even Coulomb, even just electron-electron interactions, they kind of drive the system into this antiferromagnetic phase. And for bilayer, we should take the RG done by Oscar and Yona, and also, depending on what we plug in for bare parameters, see if we also go to this region. Yeah. So,
any more questions or comments? If not, let's thank the speaker again. All right, here comes the last talk will be given by Alan McDonald from University of Texas at Austin.